to House Talk on News Radio WHAM 1180. The show is a weekly conversation about all things you should know when buying, selling, or maintaining your home. Join in with your comments or questions. Call or text 222-1180 or 1-800-295-1180. Now, live from the News Radio WHAM 1180 studios in downtown Rochester, here are your hosts, Jeff Schofield, Mike Reed, and Jamie Messner.
Hey, everyone. We're back. Welcome to House Talk. You can reach us at 222-1180. I'm Jeff Schofield with RE/MAX.
And Mike Reed with All County Inspection Services.
Jamie Messner, Premium Mortgage.
And I was just saying, you know, Mike and I were talking, got here a little bit early, and we're saying, you know, like, how you finding the market. I got four calls yesterday from new clients. It's almost December, you know. I told one of them, I go, well, you know, you might want to consider waiting till January now that the holidays are here. And nope, they want to meet. They want to get rolling now. So if you're looking for a home, you know, there's less competition right now. Keep looking.
Yeah, we have taken a, the seasonal adjustment that we always take, but we're staying pretty busy with our inspection business. And then also the bigger one that we have not bumped into, we've done it on purpose, is the environmental things that we do with mold, radon, wood-destroying organisms, chimneys. Those are all on the increase when home inspections are flat. And that's why we did it. We, you know, wanted to fight the bell curve when all of a sudden things got slow, you know, especially chimney inspections, because everybody and their brother wants to burn their chimney at Christmas time. And all the chimney sweeps are full, you know, booked out 4 or 5 months out. So we are able to get an inspection in to tell you if your chimney is safe to burn in this year or not. So Chimney inspections are big right now. Did two yesterday. Yeah. And I broke my camera, so I'm spending all day this afternoon fixing my camera so I can do more when the phone rings.
Yeah, we're feeling the seasonality, that it slows down just organically this time of year between Thanksgiving and Christmas. It seems to hit a little bit of a lull. Yeah, yeah, but there's still a really good chunk of people that I've been working with since the beginning of the year that weren't able to find anything during the spring or the summer. They kind of held off for a little bit, and now they're looking to get back into it, thinking there might be less competition in the market. They might be able to find something, a good deal, perhaps. So there's still people looking.
So has that tiny dip in interest rates made an impact on you guys? Didn't one just a small dip in interest rates, be a quarter point or something like that?
Yeah, it's dependent on the program and all the other factors, credit score, loan to value, things like that. But there was a small dip, and people, they're very, they get excited about that when that happens. So
it's funny that doesn't make a one quarter of a point doesn't make that much difference.
Not really.
Payment.
No,
but
no.
Everybody does get excited about it.
They do. And getting excited is good. We want to see that momentum.
And I think, you know, Jeff said it just a few minutes ago off there. I think that it really is a resetting of expectations from the consumer end. Like the 2.5%, 3%, 3.25% interest rates are gone. They're not coming back. You're not going to see that in our lifetime or our kids' lifetime. Those were done because of a historical event in our society, and we just won't see another one of those. So I think that we have to reset a mindset saying, you know, 5-6% mortgage rate isn't that crazy. Even an 8% isn't that crazy. It's, you know, look at what you pay in your credit cards.
Exactly. Yeah. Your car loans, credit cards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jamie, I just wanted to compliment you. I heard from Jane,
who
we referred. She was delighted. She said you answered your phone on the first ring, which just boggles my mind. Apparently the first ring, and I know she's not listening because she said she goes to church on Sunday. So, but she was also very impressed with, you know, the fact that you didn't make her use an online portal or have to fill it out online. She could actually meet with you, and I think you actually went to see her.
Yep.
Everybody's a fan of technology.
Well, yeah, Jane's, Karen, that demographic, you hear a name come in. I think we're doing an inspection. It might be a Jane. I'd have to look at the computer on Tuesday for a roof inspection because her insurance company's telling her she needs a new roof, and she can't sign anything online. She doesn't even have access to it. Mm-hmm. So she just doesn't have an email, doesn't have a smartphone, doesn't. So there is a subset of our culture out there that has not adapted to, you know, apps.
Yeah.
So
Jane is she's a small percentage of people that want to do everything in person, which I actually don't mind because there's so many people that I never get to meet face to face. So it's nice to have that one-on-one interaction. I think, though, for a majority of people, they like the technology aspect. They like the idea of being able to submit an application or upload documents to a secure portal. But I think they also like to know that you're local, that they can come in if they need to. They don't necessarily plan on it. They don't think they're going to need to, but they like the idea of that rather than you being somewhere, you know, in the cloud or, you know, you're central to somewhere else. They'll never be able to meet you if there's an issue. So it's for the most part, I found it's a mix of people. They like to know the technology's there, that we have it, but they also like to know that I'm there physically as well.
There's a lot you can do. Technology enables us to get a lot more done. I mean, for me, I could go meet with somebody, leave, and then authenticine, as we call it in real estate, you know, electronically send them documents that they can fill out online and then send back, you know, once they finish and they sign it and initial and check every box that needs to be checked. But, you know, what I've found is that a couple times we've missed something because mm-hmm. you're not actually sitting down and they might have a question like, well, what's this mean? And they don't bother answering it because they just don't know and they don't want to call me up. They're just getting through the process. So, yeah, there's a lot to be said about having the one-on-one and doing it one-on-one.
Yep.
Well, I think the online things are intended to make things easier, but sometimes it makes it easier for things to slip through that crack. I mean, last night we ordered pizza and some other things. We had some friends over, so we just got on the app and ordered some stuff. And someone wanted cheese breadsticks, and they ordered cheese bread. And if you were on the phone, you could have asked those questions for those clarifications.
Yeah.
But online, it's just checking a box, and you don't know what's wrong until the food shows up at the door. And it's like, that's not what that person wanted. They wanted something else. So I really think that it's that personal touch, like picking up the phone when somebody calls, being willing to print off a contract and take it to somebody's house. Having those conversations to close the gap is really what separates people in our industry, is that attention to detail that, you know, the 90% the app's going to get for you, the online portal's going to get for you. But, you know, that 10% is really where you need to focus on closing the gap.
Yep.
Now, Mike, I'd like to, excuse me, we're all coughing away here. Must be we, you know, spent too much time outside over the holidays.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about the wood destroying and the radon and all that. So we'll dive into that a little bit. But one of the things you brought up, I think, during the year is, you know, the cracks in chimneys and fireplaces and the tile. And, you know, you had mentioned a lot of it happens when people on Christmas morning, when they stuff all their paper in there and they light it up and it's the hottest fire that the, you know, fireplace has ever seen. And that causes the cold tiles to crack.
Yep. Well, see, Jeff, just paying attention. So in your traditional fireplace, you have the firebox, which is where the logs are burning and everybody's, you know, oohing and on at the fire. But then immediately above that, there's a damper, which allows air in and out. But above that, it looks like an inverted funnel, an upside down funnel. And what that does is it's a smoke chamber that allows those superheated gases to go from being superheated gases to smoke. And it rises up out of your chimney and gets out of the house. Well, all of a sudden people say, hey, let's just throw that Christmas wrapping paper in there and the cardboard boxes in there. That fire leaps out of the, you know, goes up and it leaps out of the firebox through the damper into the smoke chamber, through the smoke chamber into your flue. Back in the day when we, you know, not even back in the day, the day's day, you know, we used to not line chimneys. They were just a brick square or a round hole. And then we decided we needed to line those. So we started putting ceramic liners in them to make things go faster. Well, they don't handle that distribution of heat very well. So when that fire is superheated, shoots into that flue liner, you'll hear a pop. Sounds like a, you know, a pop gun or a gun going off, and you just wrecked your chimney. So don't burn your Christmas wrapping paper in your fireplace. You've been warned. Don't do it. Don't throw the cardboard box. Don't burn the bills, because that fire's too hot and too fast and gets into the flue, which is designed only in the flue liner, which is designed only for smoke, not for fire. And, you know, without getting too technical on what those things are, just don't do it, because you'll be spending thousands and thousands of dollars to fix your chimney to make it safe.
Speaking of chimneys, You know, just on a side note, what does it cost if you've got cracked tile and it's a wood-burning fireplace? You know, my understanding is I was told once that you could put a gas insert in because you won't get the embers and stuff that could possibly create fire, you know, or have it lined.
Well, there's a couple, there's a bunch of different things you can do, but most traditional is a stainless steel liner where they take, if your flue tile's cracked, you take a stainless steel liner, which is approximately the same size as your existing liner, and they pull it up through the chimney. That is the most expensive repair, but it gives you a functioning fireplace that allows you to burn wood in it. The next thing is a cast-in-place liner. This brand name is Heat Shield, where they clean the chimney really well, and they put a big squeegee at the bottom, and they basically pull this refractory cement up through the flue, and it fills all the gaps, holes, and cracks, and it gives you a smooth interior liner so you can burn again. The downside to those is they don't have the same shelf life as the traditional liner. So they're about half as expensive, but you only get about half or maybe a quarter of the amount of time out of it before they're no good. Or you can completely switch your fuel source and put a gas insert in, and they can either vent that up through the chimney and get it out of the house, or they can bore a hole, core drill, through the back of the chimney and take the flue gases out that way. And that's, you know, really kind of like a car. How much money do I want to spend on this? You know, you can get all kinds of things paid for and put into bells and whistles on a fireplace. Sounds like we're heading out to break. That was a quick one, so I'm hearing the music in my ear. Give us a call. News Radio, WHAM 1180, 222-1180. Welcome back to House Talk on News Radio, WHAM 1180. Our phone number, 222-1180. Give us a call with any of your questions about your real estate needs. Before we went off the air, we were talking about chimneys and fireplaces. So, you know, of course we inspect them. All County Inspection Services, 585-773-4001. Give us a call, or, of course, jump on our website and schedule there if you want to get somebody out to look at your chimney.
And we won't hold you to this, Mike, but lining versus the other process. I'd never heard about the other process. What about guesstimate cost? Obviously, it depends on a lot of factors.
Right. But if you budget $5,000 to $6,000 for a cast-in-place liner, you'll be okay. If you budget $10,000 for a traditional liner, that's about what you're going to be at. And again, you know, length of flue. You know, the downside to the traditional flue liners is if there's a corbel or a bend in the chimney, sometimes they can't get the stainless steel liner up through it, so it gets really expensive fast. So it depends on how you were built. Back in the day when they built the chimney. So these city houses, like out of the Park Ave area, you get some really, really weird twists and turns in your chimney. But, you know, traditional 1970 build in Fairport, 28-foot chimney is going to be pretty straightforward.
Now, I had a house years ago, and it had the gas pipe that was capped off.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Bruce Vanderwalker. That was a long time ago. But he came out and looked at it, and he said those were for originally fire starters.
Yes.
And I guess they outlawed those?
Yes, because they were, you know, starting houses on fire.
So, details.
You just got raw gas pumping out there, and hopefully somebody starts it right, you know, because it was basically a pipe with little teeny holes in it. And you would ignite it, and it would start your logs.
Yeah.
Which, great in theory, until you have a problem.
And so, if somebody were to want to say, I don't want to spend the money on lining the chimney, I'm going gas, and they're going to vent it in the chimney, do they really need to do, I mean, if they do they just need to have a piece of pipe that directs it up?
Yep,
or do they have to line it with that dryer?
Yeah, they wouldn't line it. They would put a new vent in, and there's two types of vent. There's a coaxial, which is a pipe inside a pipe, so cold air comes in one pipe and the exhaust goes out the other, or collineal liner, so you have two pipes going up it. And one brings cold air in, one takes the exhaust out. So, yeah, you don't really reline it. You just use that as a chase way to run the new flue into it. So,
all right. Thank you.
And I only talk about this stuff. I don't do it. These guys work. The guys that do this work are crazy. So I'll put my camera in it and look at it. So,
yeah, I remember when Bruce looked at ours, it was, you know, that he was on top of the roof, shimmied up the rest of the chimney, and is like bent over looking down with a flashlight. And I thought, man, you couldn't pay me to do
that. We go with a camera from the bottom up. 99.9% of the time, it's from the bottom up. And we got the camera that looks at it. And the same reason you would use a home inspector is the same reason you'd use a chimney inspector as opposed to a chimney sweep. We have no vested interest in telling you there's something right or wrong with your chimney, where a chimney sweep or a mason is going to, of course, want the $10,000 repair, not the $300 inspection. That's the reason, you know, third-party verification, you have a problem.
Yeah, nice. Bought my house year and a half, 21. So, yeah, you know, a year and a half ago. And bought new, we remodeled the kitchen and had the older cream-colored appliances. So we went out to Lowe's, bought one of their package deals. You get the dishwasher, the microwave, the stove, the cooktop, and the refrigerator. We've had repair people out at least one time for each product. And it's like, it was a decent, it was like Westinghouse, which used to be a good, you know, product. I sat there thinking, because we just recently had the repairman out for the second time for the refrigerator. And so I Googled the life expectancy of appliances. And it's kind of interesting, you know, nobody really puts a lot of value on appliances unless the sellers aren't going to leave them. You know, you've got fridge 7 years. They put hot water heater on here. I don't consider that a kitchen appliance.
No.
Your dishwasher, 7 years. Microwave, 6 years. You know, I mean, I like the fact that I can go out and spend $35, which will probably be $5,500 in another 7 to 10 years on all these appliances. But when you think about it, when you're looking at a house and it's got this really, really great, you know, kitchen with an 8-burner Viking stove. That Viking stove's 10 years. You've got probably a $15,000 price tag, you know, coming around the bend in another 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and people, when we talk about it with customers, people will ask us, you know, what do you think of the lifespan on these? And I, you know, try to be pragmatic about it. I really think whatever the warranty is, those manufacturers have figured out when it's going to fail. If you got a 5-year warranty, you're going to get 5 years. You got a 2-year warranty, you're going to get 2 years. We went through the same thing. We bought this gorgeous package. I think it was all Whirlpool. And literally every appliance failed within 2 to 3 years. And the cost of repair on the stove and the dishwasher were more expensive than replacing them. So, I mean, it was $299 for the pump plus the 2 hours of labor to replace the dishwasher. And then there was a $900 circuit board that went bad on our stove. So I just think that, you know, so.
Built-in obsolescence.
Yep.
But I guess we're taking another break. Give us a call, 222-1180, after the break.
Welcome back to House Talk on WHAM 1180. Give us a call, 222-1180. And guys, I just want to go back to the fireplace conversation from earlier in the show. What have you heard about the doing away with the wood burning fireplaces or the gas inserts? One of the two. Is there something going on where they're trying to get rid of no more actual wood burning fireplaces?
No, the state has developed some action plan committees to try and, you know, rein in emissions within the state. There's been a lot of pushback, and right now there are, as far as I know, there are no actual requirements to ban these things. But the information gathering and the typical way New York State operates on everything is they slowly enact a few things and it just slowly ramps up. And then eventually, if people don't push back and say, hey, we need wood-burning fireplaces out here in the Southern Tier where there isn't reliable gas and propane, we've got to have wood-burning stoves. It will eventually happen, but people need to get online, read things, and push back. But it's all wrapped into this climate change agenda that Albany is pushing. So,
got it.
I can't go into too many details about it because I don't know enough about it because it seems to change every other day.
Yeah.
So
changes.
But that is another question that's kind of a cousin to that. Jeff, solar panels. Do you see a return on investment for someone putting solar panels on their roof?
No. I mean, I think that whatever you save and utility bills, unless you're going to stay there for the rest of your life. If it's a family home and it's been in the family for 100 years, you probably wouldn't want to put them on anyways because it wouldn't look good. But, you know, if you go to sell, you're going to take a hit on value. I mean, I've had, I've had a call for about a month now. I've had homes that had the geothermal. And it's so confusing that it turns off a lot of buyers. And, you know, I mean, the seller's super excited. He loved it. He read up about it. He always wanted it. You know, the buyers come in going, you know, I just want a normal furnace or a boiler.
I think a lot of those things, solar, geothermal, the price to buy in is just so high that, like you said, you're going to have to stay there for decades to make a payback. And even if you completely eliminate your gas and electric bill by going with these alternative methods, you know, you've spent $50,000-$60,000 to get geothermal in your house and solar panels on your roof. At $200 a month, that's a lot. That's a long time to save to be able to make it pay for it. And I would think that it would wear out. But so what you're saying is you don't see an asset appreciation. So, you know, you put a $50,000 roof or $50,000 solar panels on your roof, the value of your house is not going to be $50,000 more.
Oh, I think it might be less because you're going to turn off buyers. I mean, I drive around, you know, and you see in more rural areas, you know, but you'll see, like, you go in this house and they put, you know, solar panels, and it's got a face where it sees the sun. So, you know, if they're on the front of the house, you know, it looks horrible. At least that's my opinion, and I know I'm not alone. You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, God, I don't want to come home to that every day.
Well, and if you're out there and you have a great experience with your solar panel, geothermal, 222-1180, give us a call and yell at us, tell us why we're crazy. But from a maintenance perspective, I just know that they wear out and then you have to fix them. And things that I built 10 years ago are going to have a hard time finding parts. So I just I look at that as a maintenance standpoint all the time.
It could be, you know, obsolescence in that. Speaking of obsolescence, who do you guys use for cellular service?
We use Verizon.
Yeah, Verizon. Yeah.
So, I mean, I got my first cell phone back in the late 90s. You know, I mean, they just, it was one of those transportables. You had like a knapsack that you'd carry around. And Verizon was, you know, one of the first big networks out there. And I know for years, you know, I mean, my sister had, AT&T, I don't remember who she had, but it was horrible service. And Verizon was the best. And honestly, I think that maybe they invested just so much in their network. I'm wondering if it needs updating now because they're not great anymore. I mean, their service used to be far better. I've got messages that I have not got that people said they leave for me. The service is, you know, sketchy. I would love to hear comments from people if you've tried somebody else. I mean, the actor, you know, whatever, what's he got? What is it, T-Mobile or something?
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds.
He started a new phone company, I guess.
You know, you think about that. Like, you know, the technology is going to last a given period of time. Tesla, I mean, I'll be dead. But, you know, 20 years from now, I bet they'll start having problems.
Looks like we got a phone call coming in here.
Oop. Hello, welcome to House Talk.
Good morning. This is Dale calling. I just wanted to comment on the solar.
Yes.
I can agree with you as far as payback and the price of things nowadays, especially. But my experience is I live in the country. I have a south-facing sloped house on the back of the house. I've had solar on there for 12 years. The initial price was $32,000, which is an awful lot of money. But with the rebates and the tax rebate and so forth, I paid $6,200, and I've recovered that already on it. So I've had a positive experience, but again, it's been on the roof. I have had no problems or no issues or no repairs with the solar panels, and my electric practically is down to nothing because of the fact that I don't use a lot of electric, and I do have the solar panels, and all I pay for 7 months is the initial $17.35 to be on the grid because I don't use enough electric to begin with. So I just, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm just saying I've had a good experience, but each situation is different and depends on pricing and, like you say, whether you have a house with a facing roof to the south and who you have install it and their reputation and so forth. So you asked for comments.
Let me just ask you a few questions because, you know, a long, long time ago, I worked for a solar company as a project manager. So I just had questions that, you know, that are outdated. The answers I have are outdated, you know, because it was over 10 years ago when I worked for them.
So yeah, mine may be also. Go ahead.
So with your roof that you're on, what would happen if you needed to replace your roof? Like if your roof shingles went bad, you had a flashing issue, do you have it built into your contract where they remove the panels and put them back on? Or how would that piece of the puzzle play out, a long-term investment?
That's an excellent question and to be answered.
I alleviated
that problem in the very beginning because the year before I had the solar panels put on, I had a metal roof put on. And I've had experience with metal roofs, so I don't anticipate having to replace my metal roof like you would on a shingled house. And I've also had metal put on a 1850s barn, which I will never have to replace. So I do not have that possibility of having a problem with the asphalt shingles. But that is an excellent point you make.
Well, so, I mean, that's some good advice to anybody out there who's looking at doing solar is consider a metal roof before you put the solar over the top of it. You know, they last a lot longer, and you're going to get better wear and tear underneath your substructure under your panels.
Correct. So.
And I think, I don't know why I think this, I think maybe Scott Reeves told me, but I think the roofers will actually take them off gingerly and put them back on.
Yeah,
and they don't really have to disconnect a lot. You know, it's just they're not going to be useful.
And you said you've had your panels for 12 years?
12 years, right. I've never had a panel replaced.
And do you have like a monitoring system where you can see how much it's generating, yeah, or not generating, that type of thing?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And have you seen a decline over time? Like, so they were producing X number of kilowatts year one, and now we're at year 12, or, you know, 50% of production of what we were originally.
Right. I have to be honest with you. I don't pay any attention to the monitoring part of it. That's done through the company. It can be retrieved on my computer, but I'm not really computer savvy, so I do not pay any attention to the results of that. I go by what my usage is in electric, and again, I don't pay for electric for 7 months out of the year.
Nice.
Yeah,
excellent. Sounds well. Thank you very much for your call, for answering those questions, giving us your thoughts. We're going to break here. 222-1180 is our phone number.
Have a good day, Dale. We're back, and question regarding mold assessment. You know, what would they, so most people, they only find out about mold if they're going to think about, or they only care about it if they're going to refinish their basement, if they've sold their house, they didn't even realize they had it, or a roofing contractor is doing a complete tear off and they say, you know, on the back side of these, this plywood looks pretty funky and, you know, you might want to have the house looked at and treated for mold. What's the average homeowner? What should a person look at? A, because it could probably keep you from having health problems, and B, take care of it now before you go to sell.
Yeah. Anywhere that you have chronic water penetration or water, standing water within your house. And water doesn't necessarily mean liquid water. It could be water vapor. And that's what's happening in your attic when people say, hey, I've got a mold outbreak in my attic. It's high humidity in your attic from air with moisture in it escaping through your insulation and condensing on your roof deck and allowing moisture to be there. Basement corners, we're going to refinish the basement. We got that chronic leak. Bathrooms, underneath kitchen sinks. One of the biggest ones we find, believe it or not, is the line going to your refrigerator. You'll get a lot of places you'll have a leak behind a refrigerator and you just don't see it. because refrigerators have a drying component with them to stop them from building up ice. So you get moisture inside your wall or underneath your floor covering, and you never see it because the refrigerator's taking care of it, but it's replacing itself, so it's staying wet, and we get a big mold outbreak from that. We see that a lot. So the big thing I wanted to talk about with mold with people is when you do a search for mold remediation, mold assessment, mold whatever, New York State after Hurricane Sandy changed the rules about mold assessment or mold remediation, in that you can't do remediation on a project that you have assessed, and you can't assess on a project that you're going to do the remediation. And the reason for that is customer protection. A lot of people got ripped off by, you know, painters that said, yeah, I can take care of your mold, or a contractor that said, yep, I can take care of your mold. And they couldn't. They didn't take care of the problems. They covered it up, and the problems got worse. So New York State came out with this mold assessment law. So my advice to anybody is, do not call a mold remediator first. Call a mold assessor. Call someone who does mold assessments. Most of the mold remediation companies have assessors on staff, and that's their low-hanging fruit. If they can't get you for the whole job, they're going to get you $300 for the assessment.
Do you know anybody that does assessment?
Yeah, All County Inspection Services does them. So, you know, 585-773-4001. I would also recommend, when you do the Google search, that remember that there's a couple things that are happening when you've discovered mold in your house. One is if it was a sudden flood, like you come home and the basement's full of water. Oh, wow. I think we're done already. I guess we'll have to come back and talk about this next week.
To be continued. Yeah. I hope everybody has a great week. I'm Jeff Schofield with RE/MAX Plus. I can be reached at 600-5333.
I'm Mike with All County Inspection Services. Our phone number, 585-773-4001.
Jamie Messner, Premium Mortgage, 585-944-8876.
There we go.